When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Elise Glink Show. I'm Elise Glink, and I'm here to help you make smart choices about your financial life. So since we just got back from the July 4th holiday, I don't have a guest with me in the studio this week. Instead, I have a report for you on some interesting survey results about water conservation and mitigation trends for landscaping projects. That survey was conducted by the online home design and renovation platform House, H-O-U-Z-Z, and it really is a sign of the times, given the drought situation out west, the extreme flooding that's affected Texas this year, and other parts of the country. Important stuff. Then I'll share the results from Bankrate's June Financial Security Index, which is derived from a survey that asked how people were feeling about their financial situation at the beginning of last month. This was an eye-opener for me, because there are some competing trends behind the numbers. And I think there's reason to be concerned that Americans aren't quite saving enough money. Maybe they never have, maybe they never will, but I felt it important to call your attention to it. And that's the type of problem that compounds itself over time, which is why I've got some real concerns for middle-class prosperity that I'll discuss at the end of that report. Finally, I'll wrap up the show with a question I received from someone who's dealing with a tenant that plans to move out without paying her last month's rent. Ugh. This is no fun for a landlord, particularly if you depend heavily on that monthly check to pay the bills for the property. So stay tuned for my advice in case you ever find yourself walking that same mile in those shoes. All right, that's the schedule for this week. Let's get started. Recent weather patterns are forcing property owners to take steps to manage changing water conditions in their neighborhoods, and that's changing the way houses look and feel. Home design and remodeling firm House just released its 2015 Landscaping and Gardening Trends Survey, which surveyed 1,600 homeowners who either completed an outdoor project in the last year, are currently undertaking an outdoor project now, or who plan to start one in the next 6 months. The results show that homeowners are already starting to change their landscaping designs to cope with regular droughts or, on the other hand, floods. So in Texas, nearly half of homeowners surveyed said that flooding was a top challenge for their property. And nationwide, flooding and drainage issues were by far the most common challenge addressed by urban, suburban, and rural property owners alike. Meanwhile, 7 out of 10 homeowners in California listed drought and water shortages as a top challenge for their landscape projects. Drought and water shortages were also the second most frequently cited challenge behind flooding issues for urban and suburban properties nationwide. For rural properties, the second most frequently cited concern was erosion. So what are people doing to cope with these divergent water problems? In rural areas, about one quarter of all property upgrades included a rainwater harvesting system. That number fell below 20% in urban areas and below 15% in the suburbs. And drought-resistant planting is a really hot trend. Nationwide, 42% of newly added plants were rated as drought-resistant, and more than half of all homeowners surveyed were either reducing or removing their lawns. Now, in California, the proportion of homeowners either reducing or removing their lawns reached 85%, just shy of half of all projects involve complete lawn removal. Now, it may not be the yard of your dreams, and it will cost you some cash up front, but if you're a Californian, tearing up your lawn and replacing it with drought-resistant plants seems to have quickly become the smart choice for a whole lot of homeowners. And nationwide, we're all learning to pay closer attention to how local water conditions affect what we do with our landscaping, not only how often we mow the lawn. How do you feel about your personal financial situation? Do you feel insecure? Do you have enough money stashed away for a rainy day? According to a new survey, less than half of you have 6 months' worth of expenses saved up in case of an emergency. That's not a lot. But apparently, and I don't know why, it's not bothering you too much. Bankrate Financial Security Index. That just posted a 3% yearly increase in June and marked 13 consecutive months that it stayed above 100. Any reading above 100 indicates that survey respondents were feeling optimistic about their financial security. At 104.5, the June number was the third highest point the index has reached in its five-year history, with only two higher readings coming earlier this year. So 2015 seems to be a year in which we're feeling pretty good about our personal finances, at least here in the U.S. Now, of course, the FSI is calculated based on a representative sampling of just 1,000 people and had a margin of error of, almost 4% in June. And that could be enough to potentially skew the trend, so just keep that in mind. And there's reason to wonder if the latest value is an actual depiction of financial reality for certain demographics, because the same survey found that most respondents had alarmingly little money saved for a rainy day, and a significant portion reported having no savings at all. Only 22% of respondents had reached the benchmark of saving that 6 months' worth of personal expenses in a liquid form, and that would include money in a savings account, checking account, or money market account. 13% were unsure of their level of savings or opted not to answer at all. That left 65% of respondents who confirmed having less than the minimum recommended level of cash socked away for an emergency. 15% of those saved 3 to 5 months' worth of expenses, 21% saved up to 3 months' worth of expenses, and the largest chunk, almost a third, had no savings at all. And that last number is up from 26% at the same time last year. So let's think about this. The Financial Security Index went up even though nearly a third of everybody who responded to the survey had literally no savings. How could that be? Well, here's another statistic from the survey that may help explain what's going on, and it's pretty straightforward. If you make more money, you're going to have an easier time saving money. Duh. Of those surveyed who earn less than $30,000 a year, about half, or 53%, had no savings. That number dropped to only 15% for those making $75,000 a year, and folks making under $30,000 a year were twice as likely as those making over $75,000 a year to report that their financial situation is actually worse than it was last year. Lot of numbers. And this is just a small snapshot of what's going on at the nation at large. But my takeaway is that the wealthiest Americans are even more financially stable than they were a year ago. Hello, stock market. Which is helping to lift the overall FSI to lofty heights. But as a whole, the bottom third of Americans are less financially stable than they were a year ago, and the people in the middle, so-so. Over the last year, we've seen some movement on the minimum wage and some enlightened CEOs who have sacrificed some of their own financial security in order to provide better salaries for their employees. So the good news is that the increasing wealth gap is a topic that's getting attention. I don't know if we're finding solutions yet, but it's getting attention. According to the Federal Reserve Survey of Consumer Finances in 2013, which was the last most recent data available, the wealthiest 3% of the population holds more than half of all the nation's wealth. To put that into perspective, that figure stood at under 45% in 1989 and in 51.8% in 2007. So let's just say that again, right? 3% of the population holds more than half, 54.4% of the nation's wealth. And that's up from a lot in 1989 and even in 2007. Nobody can argue with this. The rich are getting richer. They have more control over more of the resources out there. The poor, who can't get much poorer since they have no savings, are seeing their ranks swell as well. And that's at a time when the middle class is struggling against wage growth headwinds. So for any student of economic history, alarm bells should be sounding right now. Because what a strong society needs is a super strong middle class. My two cents. And with the June employment numbers showing that wage growth remains stuck at this sort of sluggish 2% per year, we can all agree that a slack labor market continues to be a drag on the middle class in terms of prosperity. And I know many of you are going to say, hey, but wait, The new unemployment numbers that came out last week are at 5.3%. That's amazing, and we've created all these jobs. That's true. We have been creating more jobs. The problem is, again, if you look at the U6, which is the broadest measure of unemployment, you're seeing that a lot of these new jobs are part-time rather than full-time. They don't have benefits versus having all the benefits in the world, including pension. And they are not exactly paying sort of what we might expect something to be paying today versus what it was paying 20, 30 years ago. And so we're not really seeing wages increase all that much. Something else to watch as well. Here's a question I actually got from a man whose wife owns a home that they're renting out to a tenant. He asked, "Our renter has informed us that she's bought a new house and will be leaving at the beginning of the month, so she will not be giving her 30-day notice and does not intend to pay anything for the previous month. A friend suggested we put a lien on her new house so she won't be able to close on it until she pays us. The rent's $1,700. Is that worth the amount of lawyer fees it would cost to do all that, and do you have any suggestions?" Oy, these are times when real estate investors think back to when they were deciding whether to fix and flip or hold and rent and are killing themselves for thinking that dealing with a tenant would be no big deal. Okay, it can be a big deal. Let's just be honest. And this can be a headache, but you don't have to let yourself get emotionally involved, right? Business is business, and sometimes you have to work a little harder to get your money. So here's what I said to this particular couple. If you want to give your tenant pause before she tries to abscond without paying what she owes, you can sue her in small claims court. That lawsuit might appear in her credit history if you win, but at the very least, she'll be required to disclose it to her lender. And that may be enough of a kink in her plans that she'll want to be a little more of an upstanding citizen and pay you that last $1,700 rent check. To apply the maximum amount of pressure, you'll have to move quickly. And even if it doesn't delay her closing, she'll still have to answer to you in small claims court, which small court fees. And if you win a judgment against her, you may actually be able to collect the amount she owes you or at least hound her for a little while. As far as placing a lien on the home she intends to purchase, you'd have to talk to a real estate attorney. You probably don't have the right to place a lien on that other home unless your tenant owns the home and you have a court judgment for the money she owes you. Then you can do a lien. Finally, did you ever collect a security deposit? This is like job number one for landlords. If you don't get anything else from her and you don't feel like suing her, at least you'll have the security deposit cash. I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Elise Glink Show, and I promise I'll be back next week with a new guest and a whole new show to help you make more with your money. And if there was anything you missed, don't worry. You can find the show notes to this episode at thinkglink.com. That's T-H-I-N-K, my last name, G-L-I-N-K.com. Also, if you're new to the show, I would love it if you would subscribe. And if you're a regular listener and haven't already done so, please go back and consider giving this show a rating or a review on iTunes. Here's how you do it. Just search for The Elise Glink Show in the podcast section of iTunes, or you can just Google the whole thing. This will help the show get discovered by new people. So that's the end of today's episode of The Elise Glink Show. I'm your host, Elise Glink. I promise I'll be back next week with another new episode. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week.